Ho, ho, ho. Turn your radios down. Now turn them back up, because we are back, baby, with a brand new month. And it's your boy, Jacquees. And I got a good one for y'all this month. I got the homies rolling through. I got two comedy writers, two podcasters, respectively, Cody Ziegler and Andrew T. And let me tell you about these two fellas. They love action movies. Check. They love comedy. Check. They love food. Don't we all? And they love being black and Asian, respectively, of course. You know what I'm saying? They both are on each side of the fence, but they holding hands through the fence. That's what respectively means. And what better way to celebrate all these things than taking it back to the franchise that dared to ask the question, what if, ... two minorities? That's it. No white people allowed. But please don't turn it off. Listen. Listen, we need y'all. We need your listens, because this is the show that you have been waiting for. This month, we are bringing you four amazing episodes right here on Earwolf Presents of a brand new series called Do You Understand the Words That Are Coming Out of Our Mouths? That's right. You knew where it was going. And Andrew and Zig will be discussing a film in the very popular, very amazing, very iconic Rush Hour film franchise with the help of some guests. And they're going to be looking at everything from the fights, the comedy, the attempts at cross-cultural humor, and determining how well these films have held up over time, which, look, if you ask me, I say pretty dang on well. I love them, especially Rush Hour 1. I can't wait for y'all to hear this episode. Now, to help facilitate the Rush Hour franchise breakdown, they're not just going to talk the movies. Andrew and Zig will also be serving up a fusion of Asian and black cuisines. That's right, baby. You get two people of color together on a podcast and we cooking food for y'all. What white podcast you know do that? Probably a few, but you know ain't no seasoning on that food, because Andrew and Zig are going to be serving up fusion dishes like shrimp fried jollof rice and potato salad with QP mayo and fish roe. And if you want to know what fish roe is, listen to the episodes, because it's going to tell you, it's going to be dope, and it's going to help determine the strength of the bond between the Asian and black communities. So sit back, relax, get your ears ready. Get your giggle box ready. Get your taste buds ready. It's time to listen to the new episodes of Do You Understand the Words That Are Coming Out of Our Mouths? Enjoy, everybody.
Welcome to Do You Understand the Words That Are Coming Out of Our Mouths? It's a podcast where we, look at the strengths of the bond between black and Asian culture, mostly through the Rush Hour movies and some...
some would say exclusively through the Rush Hour movies.
You know, in a lot of ways, I don't want to be pigeonholed, but the title really kind of boxes.
Yeah, three out of the four times is going to be through the lens of Rush Hour.
Yeah, it's going to be. I'm Andrew T.
I'm Cody Ziegler.
And we're doing this with the, we're also making some food, fusing up black culture, Asian culture.
A little, but something else sprinkled in between sometimes? Or just the two? Yeah.
I mean, you know, mostly that.
Yeah. I tried to add something extra, and I didn't have the heart to commit to it, so I floundered in.
You're always trying to add stuff to the recipes, Zig.
I know.
It's too much. And our guest is Jamel Johnson. He wanted us to say 9/11 denier. We will never, ever
get
that low.
The only thing that I denied is that those numbers is next to each other. There's a 10. It's a 10 in the middle of that. It's a 10 that's supposed to be in the middle of that. That's how I grew up. It was 10 in there.
Not anymore, dog. 10 no longer exists. Every episode, we'll figure out which one of us is the Jackie Chan and which one of us is the Chris Tucker of the podcast.
Yeah. So we watch
Rush Hour and every
we're watching
every
Rush Hour, and this is also the podcast for if you're one of those people that hates mouth sounds.
Yeah.
This is, you turn this shit yeah, right, this is a mouth right, sound show. Right the fuck off.
Can you write that in the, like, is there like a rating thing that you could put like warning. M for mouth?
Mouth. Yeah. Mouth.
Yeah. 10 out of 10 mouth sounds.
Rated M for mouth.
Because some people want mouth. Some people are waking up and like,
they
want to
know.
I cannot drive to work without hearing someone's mouth.
Because this is the show where, listen, if this was a white podcast, we could either do a movie podcast or a food podcast. But people of color are going to work twice as hard. Yeah. This is both.
Yeah, this is both. We ostensibly watch one of the three Rush Hours and then pair
it black with Asian dish. A fusion-ish dish.
Yes.
For reasons too complicated to get into. In the future, it will be more fusion-y, but today we're doing a slight variation, which we're doing a black wing restaurant and a Korean wings restaurant. And then I also made, I pulled probably my most ill-advised move yet. Mm. I just thought these black guys might want to try my potato salad.
And you're right.
You know what? I did want to see what you had going on. Yeah.
Now, this is
you
a
said
real...
it like, I was like, where's the potato salad coming from?
Yeah.
Who's
doing
it? And then I was just like, okay, Andrew made this.
It's very, it's.
Can you describe the.
It's Japanese. As fuck, because Japanese potato salad is already a thing.
Yeah.
This is Japanese potato salad mixed with a mostly like traditional, like Black American potato salad recipe.
Yeah.
Except I use Japanese mayo, mm-hmm. which is like much less tangy and much more sweet.
Mm-hmm.
Called QP mayo. It also comes in the floppiest bottle you've ever seen.
The thinnest plastic known to man.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like that. It's like
sea
that.
Turtles punching right through that plastic.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Which that's it's, why we
know it's friendly. It's very environmentally friendly.
Yeah, yeah.
And I also put some flying fish roe in there and some
furikake,
which is seaweed. And
I tasted some elegance when
MSG
I hit it.
And other shit.
This is a question specifically for my brother here. Andrew's not here.
Yeah, it's all right.
Cookout. Are we bringing this to the cookout?
I'm going to be honest. The taste is up there.
Yeah.
But the fact that peas are in it might raise some questions.
Yeah.
Some people might look around and be like, all right, where the pea? Who's doing the peas? Where are these peas coming from?
Would you, if you saw this sight unseen, would you be like, who made the potato salad, or would you go in?
I would look around.
Yeah.
I would look around to see.
I'm not.
I would take a glance.
Yeah.
Because there's got to be somebody watching to see who's going to who's gonna go for it.
Yeah.
It definitely could have more aggressive spicing. I think that is the one
I would say, if I say it saw it unseen and I was at the cookout, I was like, who made this? I would look around and see there are obviously no white people here. I was like, all right, so there's gonna be the barometer's gonna be set at least at like a 6. And going in, the taste is great, very complex taste.
Right.
You can taste all the ingredients, all the notes.
Thank you.
As someone who is Black and from the South, and I'm gonna say you are too because you're from DC. Close
enough. Yeah, Virginia, we right there.
Yeah. I enjoy a little heat, like a little spice.
Yeah.
That'd be my only note to this.
Yeah.
Yeah. The sweetness is there. Throw some paprika on top of that. You know.
Yeah.
I was worried that paprika would fuck with the like fish roe.
Oh, yeah.
True.
Yeah. That was my worry.
See, that's what that was the elegance.
That was
forget
just me
the paprika. Let's go up top. You try to take it high tier, high class.
And we also got a slaw that I made also with QP mayo with Savoy cabbage, which is like kind of like Napa cabbage.
Yeah.
And
I did like this. I'm not a big slaw fan in general, but I did enjoy this.
There's a fuckload of sesame oil in the slaw.
You know what would be good?
Mm.
This slaw on like a fried chicken.
Yeah,
sandwich.
Yeah.
Well, that brings
us fun. If you really, if they,
that brings us to second question, which I haven't even tried all the Korean chicken, but what did I say? They were Gangnam style.
Yeah.
I'm a little afraid of the Gangnam style. I've been leaving the Gangnam style.
They don't describe what they look like. So I'm like, I don't know what the Gangnam style
is. There's one regular and there's two sauce ones, and I have lost any ability to even guess which one is which.
And it's like, it's a wing, it's Gangnam style, so it's either going to make you do the dance or it's going to make you like, whoop, you're going to sound, you're going to make the sound.
The Korean chicken is from BB.Q chicken.
Which doesn't stand for barbecue, it stands for
it does
best,
not.
Was it best?
Best of the best quality chicken.
Yeah.
Let me say this, it's good. It is,
in no world is this best of the best quality chicken.
No, I think it's best of the best quality chicken if you live in K-Town and can walk to this place. Good place.
Yes.
But I have had better fried chicken.
Korean? Let me say this. We were, Zig and I, the reason this is all here is Zig and I have been having a little argument. Uh-huh. I think the best wings, certainly in K-Town, I genuinely will still say LA, even though that's going to get me murdered. Uh-huh. The wing, the lemon pepper wings at Boiling Crab.
Well, that's the lemon pepper is the asterisk there. Like, that's what's tying it together. You're not getting lemon pepper wing wet outside of the South, except for K-Town for some reason. I think if you take that off the board.
K-Town is the South.
Let's just
decide it now.
I've seen a lot of
specifically
black Korean kids around there.
Let's just call it now.
Yeah. Lemon pepper wet is like that's always going to win.
Okay.
That's always going to win.
So
if we're talking dry,
I think they're so good dry, honestly. They're very juicy. Crazy.
I can't do this. This is insane.
I've been known to, two things can be true. That's what I'll say about that.
Oh, wow.
And then the third moment of food cultural appropriation, which I had forgotten about, and this is just a special bonus because Jamel is here. McDonald's, the McDonald's Corporation, mm-hmm. has started making Mambo sauce.
I thought this was...
Jamel, tell us about Mambo sauce.
Mambo sauce is a DC Metro area staple. A lot of it's a Chinese food restaurant. We call them carryouts, but it's always a Chinese food place. And you get wings. They got the classic wing combo, wings and fries or wings and fried rice. And you get a little Mambo sauce with it. And this is the standard sauce that comes with the Chinese carryout wing. It's a sweet and spicy sauce.
It's so good for a McDonald's sauce.
It's so good for McDonald's sauce. Also, it's so much spicier than you would think a traditional McDonald's customer could handle.
Yeah,
you
know? Yeah.
I was like, this is like, I could see, let's say an average white customer at McDonald's getting this thinking it's gonna be like sweet and sour sauce, whatever. And then this is too spicy.
It's genuinely spicy.
There was some bounce on there. I was shocked.
Like for McDonald's?
These are the people who had to pay, half a bill because the lady drank a hot coffee?
Yeah.
You're giving out spicy sweet sauce?
They are living dangerously. I think maybe, Andrew, you might have also forgot our last chicken dish was from Gus's.
Oh, God. Wait, did I not say that? Yes.
Did I mention Gus's? Gus's famous, well, I guess it's Tennessee, but like in LA, it's pretty much it's up there like a fried chicken staple.
Yeah. I listen.
It's in the top five.
Yeah, it is one of my favorite fried chickens.
Did a lot for the culture.
Yeah. I'm drinking my water out of a little, very faded Gus's chicken, world famous.
I must have driven by this place 1 million times.
Yeah.
And it just never seemed open.
Yeah. I could never tell if it's open. It's one of those places where like the outside isn't great. So you're like, this place is either going to go so hard or it's going to be bad.
Yeah.
It's always on lists of like great fried chicken spots. Like it's obviously
the one that I went to pick up from was
the one in near K-Town, outside of K-Town.
K-Town-ish, the one on Crenshaw. Yeah. So sort of like right on the border.
Every time Crenshaw, you know it's
right on the border.
Yeah.
And it could not have looked more closed when I went there at 5 p.m.
It looks like it's been out of business for years.
Yeah, all the the windows were so tinted that I was like, oh, they're like.
But
just,
that is a good sign.
Can I interject just off of this? Remember that time we went to a Jamaican spot?
Yes.
And we also thought it was closed. And also the lady looked almost devastated that we said we wanted to eat.
This woman
the
was visibly annoyed that we said she was like, for here to go. We said for here.
She's like, ugh.
Like a long pause. And then she was like, okay.
So that's the energy you're walking into a place. I think that's when you're like, oh, this is gonna smack.
If you go to a place and you walk in, and it looks like you're buying weed in North Hollywood.
Yeah. Yeah.
In 2012.
Yeah. It seemed illegal to be in there.
You know, strong pillars of a good black restaurant, bars in the window.
Yep.
Looks closed.
Yep.
Obama portrait.
Yeah. Obama or Shaq. I think Shaq.
Yeah, yeah.
And since we're in LA, you can include Shaq.
But it's so obviously, like, you can see the pixels. So it's obviously printed off by like a 200 by 200 JPEG they found online. Yeah. That's the kiss of like quality at a black restaurant.
This is true. Or a Mortal Kombat 3 machine.
Yeah.
Ultimate MK3.
Yeah. It's like all scratched and stuff. Yeah. Paint filling up. Yeah.
Those are big time attributes.
Oh, man. All right, so before we weigh in on whether this meal improved or worsened relationships between black folks and Asian folks, let's briefly talk about the movie Rush Hour.
Oh, yes. Yes.
谢谢.
Please tell me you speak English. I'm Detective Carter. Do you speak any English? Do you understand the words that are coming out of my mouth?
Okay. In my mind, Rush Hour came out in 1998, directed by Brett Ratner, starring Chris Tucker, Jackie Chan. You know, a bunch of, like, Chinese character actors. Kind of no one else.
Can I tell you one of the notes that I wrote down that I genuinely was impressed by is... They don't cast white guys like this anymore. Like, there are some quality white guy character actors in this movie.
Oh, yeah. Oh, boy. The police chief. Like, yeah. The captain.
Yeah, yeah.
He's in some Tarantino stuff, right? Isn't he in, like, Reservoir Dogs or something?
Probably top tier white.
Yeah.
Like, that guy was solid. The FBI guy is quality white guy casting. The evil British guy that was running the whole show. Magnifique white guy casting. Like, that's, like, peak. Released in 98, probably filmed in, like, top of 97.
Yeah.
Quality mid-late 90s white cast.
Here's a question, because I was taking notes with an eye towards, do you think our listeners know, do we assume everyone has seen Rush Hour? Because that was initially my assumption with how we would do this podcast, and I started to get the, like, people might not know what the fuck it is, sweats.
I mean, we have to answer that question for people that haven't seen it, but I'm going to say, if we're, like, just looking at the niche inside the niche of, like,
Who's actually listening to this?
Earwolf Presents Listeners.
Yeah.
Earwolf Presents Listeners, hosted by Andrew T and Cody Ziegler. I'm going to assume they know what it is. But also, it's a movie podcast, so you watch along with it, right?
Yeah, this is true. I want to say it might be a 50-50. It might be a toss-up. I
mean, it's an, like, old-ass movie.
Younger people have not seen it, but everyone of color has seen it.
Yeah.
But obviously, my demographic is the youth, so I just worry.
That's why you're on a skateboard right now.
As my popularity
doing nollies the whole show.
Vaping and doing nollies.
I'm just going to really briefly, the plot of the movie, it's a very by the numbers buddy comedy.
But I will say,
yes.
Well, I will say, well, like, structure wise, very tight movie.
Yeah, yeah.
You know? Oh, no. The pace of this thing is,
it's really
one of the greatest DVDs for a reason, guys.
Yeah. So Jackie Chan is a Hong Kong cop. He's on the trail of a crime organization known as Junta. Oh, let me just interject already off my pace. This might be the thing that jumped out to me that wouldn't maybe have jumped out to you guys. They just do not differentiate between Mandarin and Cantonese.
I was about to say, I obviously don't speak either language, but I was like, this doesn't sound like the Mandarin that I've heard my friends talk.
They never have characters speaking different languages to each other.
Yeah.
But it's not ever played for anything other than,
not English.
Yeah. It's just like, it doesn't matter. Who cares?
Yeah.
And Jackie Chan speaks both fine. Okay. But so he is on the trail of Jun Tao. He is the good buddies with the consul from China, which is a kind of a vague ambassador-y type
consul
of job.
That
feels like it's not a real job.
The handoff was in 99? Is that when the...
I think it was 98.
98, all right. So it was topical. Okay.
Yeah. Yes, this is a...
studies teacher showed us this.
Really?
And then they were like, you're right here, 97. Right now.
Yeah, July 97. The two movies that now I think of that are highly centered around the handoff are Rush Hour and Infernal Affairs.
Yes.
Which is fucking crazy.
Yes.
And sort of Street Fighter?
Well,
yeah. Bizarrely too, yeah.
A little bit.
Oh, the Street Fighter movie?
Well, maybe the movie more so than the game, but I just remember that, you know, Chun-Li is
man.
Much from Hong Kong and not. Yeah,
does she have like a British accent or something?
There's like a whole thing. Like they're definitely dealing with Interpol and it's like going down.
The game makes a big deal of giving her the communist Chinese flag.
Oh, was she China? So who was from Hong Kong?
Maybe it was Fei Long? I mean, definitely, they definitely didn't have in Street Fighter 2
Fei Long, some, I think.
Someone from China and someone from Hong Kong. They were just like, it's all the same. They're like, are we sure Honda's not from China? They don't care. I'm just saying to them, they don't care. Okay, so the console has a daughter whose name I forgot. It doesn't matter. She's only in like
Su Young.
Okay.
Whatever you do, you're doing it for her, Chris Penn.
Oh my God.
All right. I'm a squeal for you.
Jackie goes back and forth between Cantonese and Mandarin for no reason. Mm-hmm. They go to LA. We meet Chris Tucker. He's a loose cannon.
Can I interject two things?
Please.
This is such a small, stupid beat, but like the forklift driver that seemed to just be doing his job, they got punched by Jackie Chan for bad. I mean, he was not driving safely, but like, I kept thinking, like, he was just working, right? Like, he wasn't, like, was he part of the...
But he was, yeah, he was forklifting.
I think he was just on the Stevedore.
Oh, he was a bad forklift.
Yeah, like, he was an evil forklift guy.
Because he just seemed like, he's just, like, a bad driver. And, like, he almost killed him, but, like, Jackie Chan didn't know that he was, like, working for the guy.
Nah, he was running drugs and guns with them forklifts, man, for sure. Yeah.
But he's still a union Stevedore. Let's not. I mean,
we're not going to disrespect, but, you know, he made some choices. He was ruining it. So
we're in L.A. with Chris Tucker in his leather jacket.
A tiny break for a fashion discussion.
His suits are enormous in this. I mean, it's like you remember the NBA, how the suit they used to
wear?
It's like three sizes too big.
Oh, my God. And those were already big dudes.
Yeah.
In suits that were like so long. So wide.
There's one particular draft where everyone has the crazy suits. All I know is Drew Gooden is involved. If you look up Drew Gooden draft day suit, you'll see everything you need to see.
I was going to say we might reserve this rating system, but at the end of this, we might rate this how many buttons out of five do we rate this movie? On Chris Tucker's long ass suit, long ass double breasted pinstripe suit.
Because he's also undercover. He's playing like a menace.
Yeah. I was thinking about this while I was watching it. I'm of two schools of thought when it came to like actually directing this movie. Is like, how much of it is like let Jackie Chan cook during his scenes? How much of it is like I'm gonna let Chris Tucker just improvise and cook for his scenes? And when they come together, I think it may be too many cooks in that kitchen, because there are moments where I'm like, oh, Chris Tucker is killing this like 90s comedy, but watching Jackie Chan's comedy beat be like, I don't speak good English, or like,
yeah,
isn't it crazy that a Chinese man is singing war? Is that wild?
To jump ahead, I think I know this is a massive franchise, one of the most massive franchises in the world that is predicated on their chemistry. I don't think they have that great chemistry.
I'm gonna say 90s.
It's not terrible, but it is not as
not
great
in this movie.
You
know what though? Hey, Rush Hour 2. Hey, come on.
She couldn't be a sequel.
Them guys was on fire. They both dropped 30 in Rush Hour 2. Okay, they were
finding their footing. Right. I will say, watching this, I'm like, it's like two halves of obviously wildly different movies that they threw together. Which is like one is like Beverly Hills Cop 4, which is like,
basically.
Chris Tucker is so charming.
Yeah.
He's fantastic. He's funny as hell in every scene. He's like also like really good acting in this movie.
Yeah.
The other half is like Police Story 3 that Jackie Chan is in.
Yeah.
And they put it together and like it works for me. Like it works when it leans into either one, when it's like, all right, we're in a Jackie Chan movie that Chris Tucker happens to be in. It's great. But when it's like, all right, here's Chris Tucker talking to his like skeezy cousin that Jackie Chan just happened to be in. Like that is mostly.
This feels like a movie where both sets of agents had complete veto power. And so it was like a negotiation every other scene. You know, it was like, whose scene is this?
Yeah.
And that tells you what movie it is.
Yeah.
And the next scene, it's a whole new negotiation. It doesn't matter what happened in the previous scene. The only thing that matters is this scene now.
When was the last time either of you have seen this movie?
I think it's been since it came out.
You know what? I think I watched it exactly 1 year ago. I think I made my girlfriend watch it.
Because you knew.
I played one of those cards.
Yeah.
Because it's like, look, dude, if you're going to play the girlfriend card and make me go to the farmer's market,
yeah,
I'm going to play the boyfriend card and make you watch Rush Hour. Why wouldn't I do that? Uh-huh. This is what we do. Let's play our roles.
That's an adult relationship. That's called give and take.
Exactly. Yeah.
That's called negotiation.
I think I have not seen it since it came out. And I...
Oh, yeah. Okay, yeah. Another sidebar.
Yeah.
Were you apprehensive as I was about this movie before?
Yeah, I went in being like, this movie's going to be so deeply racist. And it, for the most part, is only kind of racist.
Yeah.
Like, specifically, I didn't...
It's way less racist than I thought. It's a billion times less homophobic than I thought.
Yeah, oh, for sure. That's like barely even in this first one.
Yeah.
I don't even think.
Jamal's like, oh, but they make up for it.
Second one, hey, listen, there's some stuff that takes place, but this first one, that kind of
was... I was also going in, I'm like, oh, it's probably going to be more racist towards the black people because I remember it takes place in LA.
Yeah.
Like, it is so shockingly racist to like just pan Asian people in general.
It is a little, but less than I thought.
Yeah.
By a lot.
Chris Tucker's button for every scene is like some random Chinese reference, like dish or like just nonsensical sounds. And then he keeps going to the next scene. And like, it's so strange because Jackie Chan calls it out in like the second scene he's in.
Right.
And then it's never commented on ever again.
You know what though? It honestly plays to me like Chris Tucker comes off more ignorant than the movie like intending to be.
Yeah. I think 30 years after, like, oh, this is a commentary they weren't expecting.
It's way milder than I thought, honestly. And it's just like, there's just less of it. And I thought it would be one of those, like, we see it now. Like, it would be a lot more like, I don't understand you because of this. I don't understand you because of this. And it's like, very little of that, honestly.
Yeah, there's only one wildly racist scene, which is when they...
Let's get to that. Okay. All right. So, blah, 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 blah. Chris Tucker's a loose cannon. We meet some white cops.
He blows up half of Culver City.
He's about
to get suspended.
That is the other thing. I did not live in L.A. when I first saw this movie. So this movie makes a lot more sense now that I've lived here for a little while.
It is really nice to move to L.A. and then watch all the movies again and be like, traffic.
He's on 6th and Vine. Yeah,
they almost drive by my house at one point. Okay, so he's about to get suspended. We meet his partner, his kind of partner that it doesn't really matter, played by Elizabeth Peña. Who's the only other person I kind of recognized.
Yeah.
What else is she in?
Jacob's Ladder, like the big thing, I think.
Whoa.
Also, again, quintessential 90s, like just cop casting, like the begrudging chief, the pain in the ass partner, who also gets a surprising arc with like the little seed of her being
a very bomb disposable she's like a bomb
disposable.
She's a bomb, a bomb squad person. It's very weird. Okay, Chris Tucker though gets a assignment that... Oh right, did we say the consul's daughter gets kidnapped by the Chinese gang
in a crazy sequence of like they had two fake cop cars, a guy waiting on a motorcycle to drive her into
a
van.
Yeah,
really well.
Oh, I did write down
the title of the movie.
Yeah,
10 minutes in.
For no reason?
Amazing.
Excuse me, sir. It's Rush Hour.
Boom, boom,
boom. I did write down, if I were in this movie, I'd definitely be one of the security guys that gets capped right here. That feels like a real me kind of like way.
I would be pool hole extra two.
Yeah.
And there's that one big nigga in like a... The African hat, the goofy.
Yeah.
It was a haymaker. I would be that guy.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. All right, Jamel, keep an eye out for who you would be.
That's a good question.
You don't have to think of it right now. Okay, blah, blah, blah. Let's see. We meet the white cops. We learn Jackie Chan is on the way. By the way, I didn't learn anyone's names. I'm just going to call them Jackie Chan and Chris Tucker. To me, it's still Jackie Chan. Let's see. Chris Tucker meets Jackie Chan at the airport. For some reason, he's flying on a private jet.
Because they took care of him. They was like, listen, my daughter's gone. We're sending in the top cop.
Yeah.
In the country. Mm-hmm. She's flying private.
My other note was the whole first act and first half of the second act could have been solved if he was just carrying an ID card. If Jackie Chan just had his ID. Whole first act doesn't, or the whole second act.
That does make sense. There must be a deleted scene. He must have lost his wallet when he was scrapping that forklift guy.
Yeah. Yeah, when he did a backflip and kicked him with his chair.
On the tarmac, we get to hear the line that inspired the whole generation. Do you understand the words that are coming out of my mouth?
Mm-hmm.
And then Jackie Chan pretends he can't speak English for like 15 minutes for several scenes.
Yeah, the first act, he's like, I don't speak English. It's a big buildup to that reveal. Like,
it's crazy. Yeah. In my memory, it's like a 30-second bit, and he basically comes clean when he gets in the car. It goes fucking forever.
And honestly, like at this point, when I remember the first time I seen it, I had seen Rumble in the Bronx. I had seen, what was the other one they gave us of Jackie Chan early?
Not Police Story, Rumble in the Bronx. There's like two that came out like one
year. Yeah, they were shot the same
whichever
year,
one
right?
He was in Australia. Listen, I've seen them both.
Yeah.
And I was like, I don't even know if this guy knows English.
Yeah.
Everything I've seen is dubbed.
Dubbed, yeah.
So I'm really not sure what's about to happen. So for them leaning into this was actually really, it was like a huge reveal to him knowing English.
Sure.
I was like, oh!
He got him.
I'm freaking out at the house. Like, that's really him.
You like stand up in the theater like, no!
Get the- you crazy for this one, Radner?
Yeah, like, oh my God!
All right, they do the Jackie doesn't speak English bit for a long time. There's like a bus, there's
he
a gun.
On a sign, on a Hollywood sign.
Yeah. He does a little bit of Jackie Chan. Okay, here's the other thing that I forgot. He does, relatively speaking, almost no Jackie Channing in this movie.
Yeah, there's like, you can tell we're like, hey, Jackie, we need you to cook for this scene. So like, here's a chair, here's a couple of goons and some powder to put on your feet to kick them.
Yeah.
Like it is.
There's baby's first comedy.
Yeah. I guess.
Yeah.
He's
just jumping off a building with no harness.
Yeah. I guess he went from Hong Kong style to like a big studio picture.
Yeah. There's moments, but there's like less like Jackie Chan shit than I thought.
Did anyone clock this when he reveals that he can speak English? There's a gong crash. Did you guys?
Oh,
yeah.
The music is also slightly less racist than I thought it was going
to
be.
Yeah. Until the gong crash.
Yeah. The gong crash got to me. And when they go to Chinatown, like, all right, this is a little, we get where we're at.
Because
it's like, and it's also like the reveal that Jackie's being silly.
Yeah.
So they give us a big gong crash. It's crazy.
The beach. Oh, and then he learned, let's see, after the cab, there's a bit where Chris Tucker learns the gun disarm, the classic Jackie Chan gun.
Because they're staking out a place.
Yeah.
They're starting to bond.
Yeah. No, not that. They do it right away.
They're doing it to each other.
Yeah.
Like really trying to.
Yeah.
Beach Boys. Okay. Oh, here's my other thing at that Beach Boys bit. I wrote down, Jackie Chan shows great restraint in not saying anything racist about hip hop.
You know what? That's very fun. I had a very similar note. When we get to the pool hall scene, and after the first beat, I'm like, oh, the note literally is, this is written in real time. I praise the restraint of not having Jackie Chan send the N-word. And timestamp, 2 minutes later, wait, never mind.
Okay. And then, the next scene, we're in the middle beats of a buddy comedy. They are gone rogue and they are trying to they're trying to solve the case on their own. So Chris Tucker has a lead at a black pool hall. And my only note is, this is the most breathtakingly ignorant scene I've ever seen in my life.
They did some good work there, man.
It's like impressive.
Shout out to my guy, Clifton Powell, another DC guy.
Yeah, yeah.
The guy, his cousin.
Yeah.
Oh.
DC legend.
Yeah.
Pinky himself.
Okay, so the premise of that bit is Chris Tucker is talking to his cousin to get some information. He's like fake shaking him down, but he is actually getting real information.
I will say, going back to like the structure of the movie, I will say it is, they had much more respect for their audiences back then because they plant the seed of like Chris Tucker saying, do what I do.
And yeah.
He says, like, what am I nigga, like 3 or 4 times. And they don't call it back to 3 or 4 scenes later, which I'm like, and today, the beat would be you come in, you say it, and then he just says it immediately afterwards. But I was like, you know what?
That's true.
If I gotta give them credit,
okay.
They let the beat sit for a bit.
So having come in to the pool hall,
yeah,
Chris Tucker has just told Jackie Chan, just follow my lead, do what I do.
Yeah.
He proceeds to say the N-word like three, call, you know, greet people normally, three or four times. At no point does he have like a little spark and say, hey, don't do that.
Yeah.
To Jackie Chan, the man who he thought didn't speak English like 10 minutes ago.
See, that's my thing about this whole movie. Chris Tucker comes off the dumbest.
Yeah. He does come off as like cartoonishly like Homer Simpson, stupid and ignorant, which again, like, I don't know if that was, I think that's one of those things that 10 years removed or 30 years removed, you're like, oh,
yeah,
this is added commentary that wasn't probably applicable when it was first coming out.
But like, it's wild.
It does make it an easier watch with that in mind.
But then Jackie's first big or second big fight scene, he has started a bar fight because he calls someone the N-word and they rightfully do not like it. And Brett Ratner, a white man, puts all of us in the audience in the position of rooting for the man who's beating people up for his right to call them the N-word.
Again, that scene does not hold up. Yeah. You know, under scrutiny, it is wild that he just beat a whole bunch of niggas' asses in a bar with pool cues.
One old man who's like really stoned as well.
Yeah.
It's like he fucks them up for no good reason. It's so bizarre.
And that's also, not bizarre. It kind of, it brings Jackie's character down as well, because at this point, it's like Jackie's the smart one. Chris Tucker's dumb.
Yeah.
Jackie's the smart one. And then at this point, he's like, actually, maybe I should say it. Like,
I wonder who's pitched that. What was it? Jackie Chan? Like, hey, Brett, I got a great idea for it. Or you think Brett came in like, we need to have this.
I think, I'm just going to guess. I'm not going to look it up, even though I have the Wikipedia open in front of me right now.
This was in the first draft.
Yeah. I'm going to guess.
This is what stays.
I'm going to guess the writers were white and they were like, this is so smart.
Yeah.
This is the smartest thing we've ever written.
Yeah.
I mean,
Can you imagine?
A lot of writing is white people trying to successfully say the N-word through vessels.
Yeah.
So that does make
Mission
sense.
Mission accomplished.
It's really, that scene was just unbelievable. But yeah, that was his like flashiest fight scene.
Yeah, because everything, I mean, there's not a lot, they don't give him a lot of room to like do his stuff in this first one. Anyway.
Yeah.
Because they had the fight in the Chinese restaurant and then the fight at the museum gala thing. But that's really it. I think this is big.
Do all these fucking movies end at a fucking museum gala? What is two? It's three end at a gala, right?
No, two is a casino.
Okay, same deal for Chinese people.
Fair enough.
Okay, and then, all right, let me just blast through the rest of this plot. Jackie escapes from Chris Tucker when they go get food. He goes to the Hong Kong consul, even though that's not where he's, or the Chinese consulate where he's not supposed to be. He nearly starts a fight with the entire FBI. Again, this is a classic, why didn't you just show your ID moment? But whatever. You get a call from the gangster. They trace the call. They do the very classic, you know, Bane style, actually, let's blow up all the SWAT guys.
I was golden the entire time.
They chase the gangster guy.
I'm Dixon Vine.
Who is a fucking Hong Kong national with like bleached white hair. The single most conspicuous human being I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah.
And he just rolls around this entire movie unnoticed.
And like, so, you know, they're playing it like it's him. He's the bad guy. That's Jun Tao right there.
Yeah.
Was him being blonde like some like, this how you know he's evil?
I will genuinely say my strong suspicion, and they were probably not totally wrong about this, is they were like, people maybe will remember Jackie Chan's face because we see it a lot. We have to make this motherfucker like memorable. And people think all Asian people look the same.
I see what you're saying.
So he has
make him pop.
Bleached hair. Yeah. He's got to stand out. Okay. Yada, yada, yada. There's some C4. They shake down the guy. They go to the Fu Chow restaurant in Chinatown, LA's Chinatown, which to this day, I think, is it Yang Chow? I forget what.
Oh, it's there?
Yeah.
No, I just walked by. I walked by
there. A humongous banner that says they shot Rush Hour here.
Yeah.
There's the stakeout scene where, okay, here's an actual question.
Mm-hmm.
Did like Black people in the 90s, were they that familiar with that song War in my mind? In my mind, this was Jackie Chan was like one of the few songs he liked.
I would
and
say
that's how it came out.
From I mean, it's War. They got Lowrider in that. As far as for like black old heads, like
it was known.
It was known, but like,
yeah,
it would to me it'd be like Parliament or like Ohio Players would make.
Yeah,
more
if you want to, yeah, if you want to hear something like that, you're probably just gonna put on George Clinton.
Yeah. That's, but it's like, Jackie Chan ain't singing Season.
And this is, they didn't have Spotify. They didn't have they didn't have Smart Shuffle, but this is like very much in a Smart Shuffle.
Yeah.
What is it good for? Absolutely nothing. You want. Who? What is it good for? Absolutely nothing. Say that again. You are. Wahoo. Yeah. What is it good for? Absolutely nothing.
You don't remember no war.
Everybody knows war. Who? Yeah. What is it good for? Absolutely nothing. Good God. You all.
It ain't you all, it's y'all.
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 Sound like a karate movie. Y'all.
Yo.
Say it from right here with some soul. Y'all.
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 And then the other side of that is then we have to go back to we're expected to believe that the guy that knows all the words to war doesn't know he shouldn't say the N-word.
Yeah. It's like.
But whatever. It's fine. Ba, ba, ba. They bond over their police officer dads.
Mm-hmm.
We reveal Juntao is actually the white guy from the beginning.
And I wrote down good white evil white guy reveal.
Every time I rewatch it, that first scene gets funnier and funnier. Because he's just so like, oh.
Hong Kong forever.
Oh, so I'm so happy you got your paintings and stuff back. This is exactly what I wanted. Oh, hooray.
I will say, I mean, it is so telegraphed because he's like an actual character actor. But I was like, oh, I didn't see this guy being the bad guy.
I
should have known. I've seen a million movies.
Yeah, I just didn't. I just got so lost.
He's wearing
up
a six-piece suit.
I just got so wrapped up in the wonder of, you know, who was going to.
He's
who was
dressed
gonna...
like a fucking King of Fighters.
he is dressed like his stage is like the museum is on fire. He rips his state off.
Yeah.
Like, let's go.
Jackie doesn't get poisoned. I didn't notice the setup to the poison bit, but they were trying to poison him. Too. I don't know. Because
they poisoned.
They put poison in his tea, but he doesn't drink it because he sees that the waitress has the hostage's necklace that he gave her in the first act.
Yeah,
which, by the way, if you are an international crime ring and you are kidnapping the daughter, a high-value hostage, maybe don't give her one-of-a-kind necklace to just some waitress at your crime restaurant.
Yeah.
I don't know. That's just me.
But that's what happens. That's what happens when you try and get the cheeks, man.
Yeah.
You get sloppy.
Yeah. He was trying to flex and he was
like, hey, girl, look at this. I got this for you.
Chris Tucker gets upstairs and gets punched. And we get the trailer moment where he gets kicked. And then
still funny.
It is good.
Still funny.
Which one of you guys did that?
Yeah.
That was pretty good. It doesn't make it was one of those things that in retrospect, it's funny. It was so clearly just made for the trailer because it doesn't really matter at all. Like, it doesn't do anything. He just gets kicked by not one of the main villains.
Yeah.
And then he just does his, like, which one of y'all did that? And it's like, okay.
Damn, drag them, Andrew.
Jackie sneaks in and rescues him. They're partners now. They get
that smoke rat in you, that block, block, block.
They get their humps busted back to HQ. Oh, my God. There's a low point. Jackie Chan's going back to Hong Kong. Chris Tucker sneaks on a plane. All this is way more complicated than it needs to be. But
pre 9/11 for sure.
Yeah. There were like three beats where I'm like, oh, this does not make sense to anyone post 9/11.
Yeah.
Like, you can fully pull your whip up to the plane.
He pulls up on multiple flights.
hangs out. Yeah. It's crazy. Yeah.
We get a bunch of exposition about Chris Tucker's father that I didn't understand. Really, it doesn't really matter.
Yeah, I mean, that's just like story structure shit. You got to have Yeah. Why are they, how are they going to, what is, I mean, what is it? The, how are they going to reconcile?
They reconcile their little difference that
wasn't a tone. That's the
wasn't
one.
That bad. And then they go to the gala and fucking kill a bunch of, gang members and one guy.
I will say the restraint for Jackie Chan not to murder anyone besides, I guess, old white guy, but like he did kind of did to himself. Like he makes a point in his fight scenes not to.
Yeah, he was going to let him live.
Yeah.
He died because of his greed.
He was holding on to,
Hold on to that big suitcase of that yaper.
Yeah. And that's what Jackie Chan put a goofy on his third eye. It's like, it's your problem, King.
And then we have the only classic Jackie Chan fight because he is fighting a bunch of goons amongst a bunch of artifacts that he doesn't want to destroy.
That was like, he called in his like stunt guys to come do that scene. Yeah.
So it's very like, a lot of like catch a vase, kick a guy, just duck your head around, hold up a big vase and get punched by two guys.
And then it breaks in the end. It was fun. It was good.
Which was comedy.
It was pretty.
Jackie being wacky.
Yeah.
And that's the movie.
Yeah. Honorable mention to Chris Tucker's fight scene with blonde henchman.
Oh yeah, yes.
Which is a classic.
Yeah,
that was good.
He's like, clean yourself off, you dead.
And he does a pretty cool, they both do a, because it's a callback to the first fight scene that they have where they put their guns down to fight like men, but then in this instance they both have backup guns that they shoot each other at each other with, so it's just a draw. I will say there was surprisingly little "this is how we do it in America, this is how we do it in China" of it.
Yeah,
I thought there would be a lot more. In my mind's eye, there was a lot more like Chris Tucker's amazing with a gun, because that's how, you know, because in China,
Wild West,
kick people. Yeah,
you know what? I bet scratches that itch. I bet, I haven't seen the movie since they came out, but I can almost guarantee you that's got to be several beats in Shanghai Nights.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah.
That's what you want.
Wow. You're going like this. You've
got to whirl around.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Hi.
You didn't tell me Piss Pants Ben Barsh.
That's one of the, there's a bit in then where he like threw it in prison. And Jackie Chan's like, oh, I can break the bars by pissing on my pants and bending them. It makes no logical sense.
Yeah. All right.
But Owen Wilson's like,
his denim gets stronger because it's pee in it.
Yeah.
Oh.
And Owen was like, you didn't tell me Piss Pants Ben Marsh. The only one I remember from that movie, because I'm like, that can't be true. 10-year-old me knows there's no reality in which that's a real thing that you can do. Call them Mythbusters. Like, there's no way.
I will call them. I'm going to call them.
Get them on the horn.
Okay, here's the questions. How do we rate the action of this movie out of five dams?
I think our guest should go first.
Okay. Action. This is purely the action.
Purely the action. We're doing action, comedy, cringe. Are the three categories.
Well, I guess I gotta give it at least three dams.
Three dams.
Yeah. The scene where Jackie goes down that huge big banner. That's insane, because it's like,
right, Jackie, he did that.
Jackie has to slide to his death in a movie at some point.
Yeah.
No matter what. And he gives it to us every time. And it's worth at least three dams.
Yeah. Okay. That's out of five. That's not bad. Highest.
I think I'm gonna go three.
I think I'm going to go, just purely talking action.
Yeah.
A solid four. Cause as I was watching it, I was like, oh yeah, this is all practical. Like, they blew up this car. They blew up this building.
That's true.
They're doing wire work, but it's like, this was made now. Like, when the money was raining down, I was like, oh, that's all practical. Like, it was made now. This was like Ocean's 14. It'd all be fucking digital, and
you know,
Brad Pitt would be munching like a croissant, where the fuck he's doing the movie. But
it would literally be King of Fighters.
Sprites. Yeah,
just like
purely like production value wise, I'm gonna say four, just because it all is practical.
Huh. That's okay. True.
And whoever Chris Tucker's stunt double is doing some fine work.
Yeah. Shout out to that man.
Yeah, that's true.
Oh, yeah.
I might need to amend mine.
Yeah.
Because he does too.
I'm giving it three dams in a bad way.
Oh, yeah.
Damn.
I just feel like.
Somber damn.
I feel like. we could do better.
Yeah, look, we have seen Jackie Chan do much better.
Yeah.
I don't think of it
even
as
in
an
the
action
second
movie.
One. There's a couple stunts in the second one where
I didn't go in or come out of this movie being like, what I wanted from this was action.
I will say I was more impressed with the movie than I thought it was. Like, I thought it was going to be scale of 1 to 10. Like, I thought it would be like a fucking 5 on a 4 on a rewatch. But I'm like, this is a solid studio action,
especially
movie.
For the time.
I was like, I'd give it a solid.
Yeah.
Not yet.
No, rate the comedy. Let's see. Comedy out of C1 through C5.
Now,
C4 plays a way
Chris
way
Tucker
bigger.
And Chris Penn, I could have watched 30 more minutes of that.
Yeah.
I could have watched another 30 minutes of that. I'm going to be quite honest.
It's truly just like who's on first.
Yeah.
And I'm like
having a ball.
Gets me every fucking time.
When he first sees that Chris Tucker is the visitor who's come to see him, and Crick is like, hey, man, I bought your fat ass some cookies, dog. Such a crazy thing to say to a guy. Is you guys thrown in county?
He was like, kiss my ass up to me all day, man. Like, he's got it. He's cooking with something.
Yeah, that shit is killer. It's worth Jackie Chan saying the N-word every time.
They crawled so Jackie could run.
Comedy better than I thought, but I had very low expectations. I'm going to give it a
C3.5. Yeah.
It's not C4.
I'm going to give it a C3PO. Right.
Yeah. I think we'll do a solid C3 as well. There were moments where like, it's so fucking fun. And so it's just the classic comedy that makes it work. And then it's like, Chris Tucker's going to do like a Michael Jackson impression. Like, well, that didn't really hold up, but.
Well,
yeah.
He does that twice, right?
He does it multiple
like
times.
I guess he could do it.
Yeah.
How are you going to not do your fucking trick?
Chris, we need to break it out one more time.
All right, Brett. And then rate the cringe.
You know what?
I don't have, I'm out of, I forgot to also mention. There's a point in the movie where it's the proposition is Chris Tucker, an adult male living in the United States in the 90s, has never had Chinese food.
I think cringe has got to be 5 out of 1 out of 5.
Yeah,
he's never seen chow mein before.
Yeah. Like, it was some crazy shit.
Yeah.
Chris Tucker's character is my biggest problem.
Yeah.
In the movie, just in terms of just stuff where it's like, oh man, you didn't have to say that.
Yeah. So weird.
You're sending us back.
Yeah. You didn't have to say that, man.
So cringe. So the higher the number, the higher the cringe. I'm going to do a 4.
Oh, yeah, Chris. Chris being weird with
his partner. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Weird with the partner.
There's more sexual harassment than I thought, but less than some movies from probably that year.
Sure.
Yeah.
And I mean, is there another rating that we do?
I guess just how many buttons out of 5 do you rate the whole movie?
Well, I'll say the rest.
I don't know.
I'm going to say 4.5. 4.5 out of just
the
not,
button. Yeah.
Oh, right. The big suit, the big boy suit.
Yeah.
The Quentin Richardson suit.
How many buttons are you going on the suit?
This because it's the first one. I'm going to say on a rewatch.
Yeah.
I'm going to say solid 3.5 buttons.
I was pleasantly surprised.
Yeah.
I was very pleasantly
surprised. I laughed.
Yes.
I laughed at some
stuff. Yeah. No, look, it always works somehow, some way. I watch this movie once a year and I will again. I'll probably give it 4 buttons too. Just because we haven't mentioned how hot Elizabeth Peña is in this movie.
Oh, yeah.
Very formative to me. This her character has played a role in
for many
a lot of the swipes that have swiped.
You got to watch Jacob's Ladder again.
Oh, okay. That's gonna switch some.
That was very troubling.
Damn.
Yeah.
She's not troubling in it, but that movie is not.
I speaking of the casual sexual harassment, the bit where Jackie Chan touches her chest through the bomb.
The
bomb resistant thing.
Yeah. She does wear a flak jacket that has boobs built into it, which I don't think is regulation.
Yeah, I don't think they don't need that.
Yeah.
They do not need that.
I don't think that's how that goes.
Wait, what's your rating out of buttons for this? A total?
Mine? Yeah, I'm going to give it 3.5. 3.75
Oh, okay.
Out of five buttons on
all
right. two.
I gave it all threes, and then maybe I gave it a two for cringe.
Yeah, yeah.
And then that somehow makes it a four overall for me.
That's all about expectations. Okay, and then the final two questions of this podcast. Did this movie help or hurt the black-Asian relationship?
I guess I have to say it somehow helped.
Yeah.
Well, because this is
I think I agree.
It's coming out right after shit went down in L.A.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. It was.
Like, things were not great.
It was like in the aftermath. So these were my two timeline things I was trying to put together. It was after the L.A. riots, which was, I would say, probably the contemporary low point for, you know, Asian and black folks.
Yeah,
for sure.
But it was also after Adult Swim had started playing anime on the air.
Which Zig here
has mentioned as a formative moment for him.
He does. No, come on.
People can't see me. I have short shirts on and blonde hair.
He got the Kuwabara. He looked like Kuwabara. Yeah.
So those are the two cultural things I had pegged, which is, I recognize, very irresponsible of me, but I didn't have that much time to do research.
I'm going to say it helped.
Yeah.
Because like the target audience for this would be like my ignorant black uncles.
Yeah.
And I'm sure because of that, they went back and watched Jackie Chan's Library.
This is why it was like, it's, yeah, it definitely, I think it did some good community outreach to people who were never going to reach out in the first place.
I think my racist ass parents definitely were like, okay, Jackie Chan has at least one black friend. Yeah. So maybe I should too.
Yeah.
That would be my barely guess. Okay. And then the final, second and final question, or the third question, I guess, but the second real question is, did this meal improve things or set us back? I think it was successful personally.
It was successful. I think really
potato salad. I wouldn't bring it to a cookout. I understand. I'm not an idiot.
No, I mean, I think add the spice to be good at cookout. I want to say the sort of third unseen hero in all this, I think it did a lot for DC culture.
Hey, you know what?
The guys, mambo sauce.
Yeah. Come on out. Try some real stuff. I'll take you guys to Eddie Leonard's. We'll go to Yum's.
Yeah.
We'll go to Yum's on P Street or something.
About it. God damn it.
See if y'all get some of that real deal. McBeal.
Get a go-go mix going on.
Great. There's a Metro PCS on Georgia Ave that just sells go-go tapes. It was like a big...
Oh, fuck yeah.
So they... Okay, this Metro PCS was always selling go-go tapes, and they would set up a speaker outside and play go-go all day until sundown.
Yeah.
And then as the city begins to get gentrified, people are starting to complain about the speaker.
Ooh.
And then it was like a war going on.
Mm.
The new tenants and the Metro PCS, and like then they made them put the speaker away.
I mean, like,
and then everybody got pissed, and then they shut the block down.
Oh shit!
They threw a go-go.
Oh, let's go
in the street. They shut down the biggest like throughway in the city. Like, imagine if they shut down the fucking Vermont.
Yeah.
and it was 2,000 niggas outside listening to a band you'd never heard of.
Yeah.
Chicks throwing ass harder than you'd ever seen.
Yeah.
And then they let them bring the speaker back. They were like, basically like, we'll do this every week until you give us the speaker back.
Oh, I love that, because I haven't been to DC in maybe 10 years, but I haven't lived in Atlanta. So this might be my barometer for like what a black city is, but like,
right.
It's not
when
far
I tell
off
you DC is like so black, and it's like the hardest B you've heard in front of like the word black. Like, I went to a club, I saw more niggas in this club than I have at a family reunion. Like, it was wild, and I loved every minute of it.
Yeah, dude, damn. I remember I went to a club. What club I go to? I went to like a Ibiza, and I saw a dude I hadn't seen since elementary school smoking a blunt in the middle of the. I was like, man, this is sick, dude. I love this. I love this place so
Chocolate
much.
City, man.
Yeah, this place is fucking incredible. Is this black as shit? Everybody's black. All the bus drivers is black. It's like the whole infrastructure of the city is black, which is like, you don't realize how crazy that is until you leave.
Yeah, it's solid.
I mean, it's statehood for DC, right?
They'll never give us that. But
and Puerto Rico.
So I misheard that for a split second. I thought you said stay hood. DC is like, okay.
Oh, wow.
You
know, they're going to do that.
Wow. Yeah. It's like,
but stay hood.
That's how I'm ending this.
Stay hood, absolutely not. But staying hood, yeah, we're going to try our best.
Stay hood, yes.
we are attempting.
This last question looked better on the document than it will in real life. Because mm-hmm. the last question is, do you understand the words coming out of our mouths?
Well, I did understand a lot of that. I would say about 98-99% of them.
I think that made us laugh when we wrote this document. Yeah, but I mean, we're not doing this in real life. That's crazy.
Now, look, this is the pilot, so we work out the keys.
Figure it out. We're figuring it out.
But first of all, I guess as we dismount, first of all, thank you for coming over tonight.
Thank you for having me, bro.
Is there anything you like to plug or people should check out? People can find you.
The Air Buds podcast is coming back. It's a new NBA season. Our man, Mike Benner.
Yes, right.
Me, Mike Benner. Peter Moses, we're back in the saddle talking the shooty hoops. So check that out. It's at Air Buds Pod. And then I don't know, man. I'm somewhere else.
Yeah. Catch him on TikTok occasionally.
Yeah. Find me one day. I will be shooting a basketball.
Anything for you? Do we need to plug for this? I don't know. No, I got
this
going on.
I mean, we're gonna be plugging this from this shit
that we're at. Yeah.
Okay. There's no way someone winds up here without already doing one of the things that we're about to say.
True. Yeah, I'm like, who is this? These two upstarts, Cody Ziegler and Andrew T.
So, I don't know. Good luck. If you just randomly found this and you've listened this long, you can find us.
You can find us.
You have more wherewithal than we do.
Yeah, well,
that's it.
Great show. Thank you for coming on.
Thank
you to silent producer Matt
Apodaca,
who has rightfully not spoken anything that we demanded.
Yeah, I was over here eating wings the whole show. I ain't never seen a producer eating wings the whole show.
This half of the table is so undeniably black. Just like, Matt is just posted up in the cut. Wings are stripped, and clean. He's got like, his Mambo hasn't been touched. I mean, some notes on that, but
all right. Well, we're gonna have the Mambo discussion off mic. We did it.
Do you understand the words coming out of our mouths? Is produced by Andrew T,
Cody Ziegler,
and Earwolf. Our producer
is Matt Apodaca.
He's right here.
And our engineer is Alex Gonzalez.
Thanks, Alex.
Thanks for listening, everybody. If you made it all the way to the end, you're a beautiful person. If you're not hearing this voice, go to hell. Earwolf Presents is produced by Earwolf, Amelia Chapelo, and Cody Fisher. And of course, podcast daddy Colin Anderson himself. The Earwolf Presents series is hosted by the one and only myself, Jacquees Neal. And our theme music was engineered and sung by the amazing Jordan Duffy. Special thanks and shout outs to Jeff Gross and Aaron Nestor. And for more information on Earwolf Presents, visit earwolf.com and follow us at Earwolf on all social platforms.